Hello, and welcome.
Love Talk Radio.
This is Family Matters. I'm Jill E. Jeezy. Thank you for tuning in tonight. We have such an exciting show. And, of course, always with me, my co-host, the lovely Judge Michelle Lawrence. Hi, Michelle.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Night. It's a freezing, cold, rainy night, but I have to tell you, as they pried my World Series ticket out of my hand to take, my husband took my ticket and gave it to one of his friends tonight. They're down at the World Series. I get to go tomorrow night, but I said, look, I have somebody on the show tonight.
That's
and
right.
I am giving up a World Series ticket for David Goldman because I think this show is going to be so incredibly important. So, David Goldman, welcome. And do you know how important you are to me?
Well, thank you so much. It's really a pleasure to be here. I appreciate it. And the World Series doesn't mean that much to me, being that my Yankees aren't in it this year.
Well, too bad for you, David. That is so sad. You know, we were 10 games out in September, and who would have ever thought that the St. Louis Cardinals would be in the World Series right now?
I know.
It's crazy.
You have a good first baseman, I'll tell you that.
Boy, we sure do. He had just bought a house in Springfield, Illinois. He has a developmentally disabled child, and the Hope School here in Springfield is doing some work with him, so we're excited to have him as part of our community. It's a very exciting thing. But you're here, and this is something that has been buzzing on the internet for the last couple of weeks that you were going to be on the show tonight, and it's so exciting to have you here. Because you are one of us. You are, I'm an alienated mom, you were an alienated dad, and you have done what I talk to people about all day. You were inspired, you turned to advocacy, and you worked your way up the ladder and never gave up hope until you got your child back.
Yes, it was a very, very long battle. It was over 5.5 years of nearly complete separation. The last, say, 8 or 9 months or so, we were finally able to be together in Brazil. I was finally able to see my son, and they spent several years poisoning him to turn him against me, and not only me, but our environment, our country, New Jersey, everything, and it was very difficult, but, you know, the main thing, it's not the child's fault. They are innocent. They are vulnerable. They are helpless. They're dependent on their alienators, in my case, because we were completely separated.
And we were just talking about that a second ago. We were saying that there's so many parents, and I talk to alienated parents all day long, every day, and so many of these parents don't understand why their children are acting the way they're acting and tend to blame their children. And so once it's explained to them what's happened to their children and that the authentic child has been removed and the child that you knew is gone and they have taken on the personality of the alienator, that you can't blame your child, that the problem lies with the person who's doing the alienating.
You can imagine being in the legal system and, you know, being a judge, and when I was a lawyer having done Hague Convention cases, that people watched your story and couldn't imagine that this could actually happen. I mean, it wasn't as if your child was abducted to Libya.
Correct. Well, we are working with other parents whose children have been abducted to the Middle East and even Egypt. You know, they're going to be a democracy now, but they're still not returning American children. And Japan, a friendly nation, they have over 200 American children abducted, and they've never returned a child to any country. So it's amazing the amount of children and it's growing at an alarming rate, the amount of abductions from America to other countries. And these parents, they're up against so much. I mean, you see it happening domestically, but when you put the international borders into the picture, it is an endless, living, breathing nightmare.
Well, what did the foreign media, since you got so much media coverage, which when we get into becoming an activist, like, will even come up again. But how did the foreign media spin that they were doing this? Or did they not give you coverage?
Well, initially, they wouldn't cover the case because the abductors of my son, they were very powerful within Brazil. They were ingrained in the legal system, in the judicial system, in politics, and they were able to pull up an archaic law to not discuss this case in the media because it has to do with family matters. However, by staying the course within our media and speaking the truth, finally they felt the pressure cooker about to explode and it was going to reach Brazil. And they unilaterally lifted their own media ban and started out with an all-out smear campaign against me. And again, they tried to invoke nationalism, everything possible. So then I had to keep sticking with the truth, what was right, what was legally, morally, my God-given right to be with my child. And eventually the people in Brazil, the good, hard-working people who suffer at the hands of these same types of folks down there, they got it. And in fact, there was an article written in Time magazine, and it ended with, out of all the things the Lindsay Silvas and Ribeiros managed to accomplish was to get the large majority of Brazilians to support an American. And it took so much patience and focus and keeping with the truth, along with hope and my prayers, to reach them, and that was really a catalyst and a turning point.
But if they started a smear campaign, what were they saying about you, and how did that turn around?
It was from anything from, we live in a shack that should be condemned, I abandoned my son, I never came to visit him, I never wanted him, I never paid child support to the kidnappers to keep them able to kidnap my son, America's a bad place, New Jersey is an awful place. I'm a bad. In fact, we had things on tape and on the record from my deceased wife that we had I was a great dad. I was a wonderful father. She couldn't have been more pleased with basically her choice of a father for our child, but she decided to live in Brazil. So after she passed away, the abductors who continued the retention illegally of my son started this smear campaign and then trying to throw in violence and. But again, I had nothing to hide and only the truth on my side.
Do you think it was a gender preference to mother's side of the family to father, or did that have nothing to do with it?
Well, in Brazil, they do tend to favor the moms. Our country, it seems to be getting better as far as either gender, the more fit or... But Brazil still has it. It's more of a mom should be with the child. Even some judges actually said that. But these folks tried to make it because at that point there was no mom. Okay, once it became in the media, there was no mom. So they couldn't use that card anymore.
Right.
And then they were just trying to say that this guy who was labeled the second abductor by the Brazilian courts somehow is a socio-affective father, and trying to essentially relinquish my role as simply a sperm donor.
Well, David, you chronicled your story in your book, A Father's Love, which is available at all retail outlets. And is it a downloadable book now? You can get it on iTunes, right?
You can get it on iTunes, on Kindle, at Amazon, at BarnesandNobles.com. And, yeah, it's out there.
Terrific book, but, you know, and I can't imagine there are very many people who don't know your story. Can you just synopsize for us, because I don't want to spend all our time talking about the details of the abduction, but synopsize, you know, what led up to it and what happened initially? We know that you fought for 5 years, but what led up to the abduction?
June 16th, 2004, I drove my then wife and her mom and dad and our son to the airport for what was supposed to be a two-week vacation. I sent them off, you know, everyone with warm affections for a safe trip, and I was actually going to go visit them the end of the 2 weeks and fly back to help Bruna, who was my wife at the time, fly back with our son. I get a phone call when they arrive. Everything was fine. And then a couple days later, I get another phone call, which happened to be Father's Day, and it was in a voice that was almost unrecognizable of Bruna, and she just started out with sort of a list of demands, starting out by telling me I'm a great guy, a wonderful dad, best father she could ever imagine, but she's decided to live in Brazil. And if I ever want to see Sean again, I need to fly down there immediately. and signed papers, 10 or 11 pages of documents that her attorney had drawn up, giving all custody to her, essentially giving all my rights to my son as his dad and his rights to me as his dad, and never going to the police in America to file kidnapping charges, never going to the courts to file for divorce or separation or do anything that would interfere with her continued pursuit of U.S. citizenship. And there were a few more. And if I did any of these things, I would never see our son again and spend all my money trying. And that was I remember that day as if it was yesterday, and I just dropped to my knees with my hands in my face. I couldn't believe what I had just been told by the woman who I was married to, who I loved, who I had no indication whatsoever that she was planning to abduct our son with her parents.
Did you find out later that she had, of course it was premeditated, I mean she just didn't go and decide. Do you think this is something that her family had laid out long before the trip?
Well, there are indications of that. She ended up being involved with a man in Brazil who somehow she was able to marry in Brazil while we were still legally married in America, where we were married and where our son was born. And this man specializes in international family law, specifically Hague cases and international child abduction. And his father lectures on child abduction and parental alienation. In fact, he was lecturing while they were holding my son illegally. So she had known this man apparently before I had met her, and she had met me, and somehow they met on one of, she was visiting a friend in Manhattan apparently, and they ran into each other again, and could be that this started while she was here. Maybe her mom also dangled a carrot that she can come back in Brazil and they could have their nannies and drivers. In Brazil, it's rich and poor, and the rich have everything, and the poor have nothing. It's very sad, the separation of classes. So essentially, it seems that she just decided to just go back to where she's from, which in and of itself is understandable. However, there's a right and a wrong way to do things. And she certainly didn't do things the right way. If she went to the courts here and said, I want a separation, I want a divorce, and filed something, there would have been a great chance that she could have, if not having primary custody of Sean in Brazil, of course I would have fought it, but there would have been some sort of custody arrangement where he would be schooled either in Brazil or in America, and have holidays either in Brazil or America, but like civilized people should do in a case like this. You know, we have many divorces in our own country. International borders, again, is a little bit more complex. However, she decided to just take everything and do it her way. And this is one of the problems with the Hague Convention, because it's civil. The worst thing that would have happened, if for in her eyes, is the court say, nope, you illegally abducted this child, violation under the rules of the Hague Convention, the child goes back to the home residence, which would have been New Jersey, you come back with him, no criminal charges, then you go to the courts and you file for your separation or your divorce and let the court of proper competent jurisdiction adjudicate any custodial issues.
You know, I've had cases like that, David, and what happens is the person who abducts the child most of the time gets away with it because the person who's trying to get their child back runs out of money.
Yes.
So there's no streamlining, even if they are signed up with the Hague Convention. You know, you got to get all kinds of rules to say it's been violated, and it can go to the appellate court. In the last case I had in the Ivory Coast, the mom just gave up, just ran out of money.
Well, oftentimes, I mean, not only do you, I mean, and this is one of the, you know, the scheming issues of the abductor. They know not only is that left-behind parent emotionally, mentally, physically just completely exhausted, but financially, I mean, that is drained as well. And, you just lose everything, and it's so difficult to keep going, and many parents just have to fold. And if they're strong enough to just hope that their child will someday reach back out to them, I really praise them for that strength. But the most of them are just left, as so many parents I speak to, they just feel like a dead man walking.
Sean, David, how did you stay hopeful and full of inspiration? Did you have a very strong support group, or what was the one thing that you can pinpoint that kept you going?
Do you know, if it were only one thing, that would be wonderful, because then all these folks and all these parents and families that are suffering, we could say, do this.
Do this, but right.
There were so many. Work, I just, tried to bury myself in work, and I run a boat, and I'm out in the ocean, and I get to see the sunrise every morning, and the fresh air and the peace. I look for distractions. One of the things I had to realize is I have to accept vulnerability. I'm vulnerable. I needed help. I needed support. I needed comfort. I couldn't do this on my own. So, you kind of close off. You don't want to go out. You feel guilty if you laugh at something. You feel pain when you see a child who's around the child's age of your own that's been abducted. So many emotions. So I started out by just exercising, sort of meditating in nature, and really got support from friends and family, without feeling guilt and without trying to, you feel like you're marked with a scarlet letter as well. People, you feel looking at you. Well, why did this mom or dad take the children away? What did this person do that was so horrible that not only did she want to leave me or him, leave whomever the wife or husband may be, but not only leave, but take the child on the other side of the planet and keep them away. And you know people, there's always, it's easier for someone to see a reason why someone could be so cruel, not only to an ex-spouse or a spouse, but to the child themselves. So there were a lot of components that kept me going. And really, because it was the truth, it was right. It was our right. It was my right as Sean's dad.
I want to ask you something, because I think you hit on something that's monumental, that's guys are like. You said it's easier for people to see a reason, and you didn't elaborate on that thought, and I think it's crucial. People do judge people who are either alienated or their child's abducted. It's easier for people to say, well, they must have done something wrong. Is that what you were going to say?
Yes, absolutely. And please stop me, because I go on and on and on. I have all these thoughts of
me too, David.
Always coming through into my head. But exactly, it's easier for folks to accept that, there has to be a reason why they did abduct this child. There's got to be something hidden, because no parent would be so cruel to mentally, psychologically abuse their child. I mean, it is the most extreme form of selfishness. And I believe a majority of these alienators are the epitome of narcissists as well. And they just totally control and hurt these children. And in Brazil, because of our case, once the truth was out and Sean was evaluated by Brazilian court-appointed psychologists, and there were over 40 pages evidenced in their notes on the parental, severe, pernicious parental alienation that was being caused to Sean at their hands. They actually passed a law that it's illegal if a parent is found to be exercising this practice, so to speak, and it's punishable by jail.
How do you think the media exposure, first part of the question, A, is down there, and B, up here, affects him? I mean, it's a big issue, David. You can imagine, especially, celebrities or even neighbors gossiping about people.
Yeah, well, for Sean in Brazil, I don't know how much he was exposed to in the media over there. And here, I just, my job was, when we were back together, to do whatever I could for him just to be a regular, normal, nine-year-old boy. And I kept him out of the media. We didn't do any public interviews. We let NBC, very, very fortunate that they had a plane down there to take their crew home for the holidays, that we were able to go on that plane, because it would have been awful to bring him on a commercial flight. There would have been every camera crew in Brazil on that plane with us. So, you know, fortunately, we live in a rural area. We got into therapy right away, and he was enrolled in school within a week, and just tried to pick up as best as we could as father and son. And the good thing, when he was home, because of the media, there were so many people that would come up to us and just say, "Welcome home. We prayed for you. We wrote a letter. We sent a well wish. We sent cards. We contact." And he just saw and felt all the love. And it was really, really terrific for him to see, because it made my job so much easier. I didn't have to explain to him what I'd been through for so long and how wrong what happened to him was. So it was the media really, really helped, because in this case, again, there was only one side. There was no other side. There was no reason for someone to be so cruel, except the fact that the person was cruel in their own right.
How long did it take Sean to realize that history had been rewritten for him? Was it that aha moment that he said, maybe these people weren't telling me the right story? Or was it just over a period of time that and did he bring these questions to you? Did he say, why did they say this?
There were occasions, and that was his biggest struggle. He saw we didn't live in a shack. He remembered, I'm so glad that I kept our house. I kept his room so familiar to him. And it is also very, very important that these first four formative years of his life, that we were able to have a really strong bond. It almost becomes a DNA bond. And that the closer a parent can be with their child at these younger formative years, the easier or the less difficult it is to break the alienation, because they do have a familiar sense that starts to come back. It's almost, you know, you hear Stockholm syndromes, you hear hostage situations, and so with that, his conflict, yes, it was. His memories started to come back. They tried to erase his real memories, replace them with false memories, and he would really be struggling. If why would they tell me these? I trusted them, I loved them, and they told me these things, and I come and it's not like this. And you know, you could see his little head was so much in torment. And again, to not bash the alienators, to never speak negative about them. You don't want to walk in the same shoes that they are. And to all these parents, you know, you say they get angry at the children. It's not the children's fault. And you just need to be patient and loving and caring, even if it hurts, because you want to just take your child and shake them and say, no, this didn't happen. Don't believe this. Don't listen to this. Remember what we had. And it's a struggle, but in time. And the one fortunate thing that we have, that Sean and I have, is once he was here, he was separated from his abusers. And in many cases, the parents, excuse me, even the primary custodian, they'll have the children or child 5 days a week and every other weekend or something like that. And those 2 days, the alienator can inflict so much damage to that child, and then it takes them 3 days
to undo it, bug
them again. And it happens right under their noses, and it's a constant battle and a constant struggle. But, yeah, to undo it, you just need to be patient and hope that the child will reach an age of maturity when they can see for themselves on what's going on. And it takes an awful lot of patience and perseverance for these parents to deal with that. And often when they get angry and when they do things, they fall right into the hands of the alienator. when they get angry at the child who's being alienated, you actually help the alienator with destruction.
We've got a couple of calls here I'm going to grab, and people that are anxious to talk to you. Your name, caller? Are you there? We'll go to the next one. Your name, caller? Boy, nobody's answering me. They're there, but they're not answering me. Well, we'll just go on to our next question, and hopefully they'll come back in just a second.
What do you do when Sean wanted to talk about what they had said? Did you find that he wanted to talk about it and say, is this true? Did he want to avoid all the questions that made him feel conflict? And did you feel the need to defend yourself? How did you do that?
Well, I never needed to feel the need to defend myself. And he never asked sort of confrontational questions like that. He was like, why? Why did my mom marry you if she didn't want us together, if she didn't want to be here? Why did they do this? And those were some in his struggles initially. And he didn't really want to talk about things. And you know what? When he did ask those few questions, I said, you know what, Sean? I don't really know. Your guess is as good as mine. And some questions we won't have the answers to. But you are loved. Your grandparents in Brazil loved you. Your mom loved you. You know, in my case, in our case, there's no reason to talk bad or to try to get him angry. That's the worst emotion that he should have, to be growing up angry and confused. I try to explain it to him. Say he's got a friend and he really likes this guy, but he, you know, maybe he curses, or you know, he gets in trouble at school because he talks too much. And I said, but he's still your good friend, and you don't like it when he does those things, and you don't, you know, you're not a part of it. And that's kind of what maybe your grandma did. You know, when she acted like this or said these things, she did love you, but she didn't always have the best judgment and things to say. And of course, that's tough to tell a little boy who should think that, you know, anything an adult tells them is the right thing. But again, with therapy, with time, and just with example, how we live our lives here has really, really helped him a lot. And having friends for him and playing sports, and, you know, my job again is to make sure that he's doing his job, and that's to be a little boy, do well in school and play sports. And, of course, he also has grandparents here that he didn't see for so long, who were overjoyed to be able to hug him and take him, you know, pop-up, take him fishing into a ball game. And he's got cousins who are less than a year apart from him that he reconnected with, and friends that he had before he was taken. So just life, you know, just living life as a boy should really, really has helped him. And that was a big... He still struggles. He gets some nightmares about that last day when they, as John Walsh called it, the perp walk, the day that we were reunited in the American consulate in Rio, when they decided to, rather than enter the consulate in a secure private garage, they decided to drag him two blocks after calling every media outlet that they could imagine. And they dragged him to...
Say, are you talking about the grandparents?
Yes, the grandparents and the guy she married and my deceased wife's brother. They decided, and their attorneys, they decided to call all the media and put him in a Olympic Brazilian soccer jersey and parade him, drag him through the streets to put the final mark on how they want things done. And that shows,
how are you dealing with his maternal grandparents now, David?
As sad as it is, his Brazilian grandfather passed away in March. To me, that was sad because I was hoping one day things could be better. When we arrived in America, it was Christmas Eve. Out of all the days that we returned home, and after 5.5 years, we were on a plane Christmas Eve to come home. Somebody had a bigger hand in this than just me. Mm-hmm. But we called his grandparents right away to tell him we arrived safely. Then we wished him a Merry Christmas, and I had my attorney reach out to their Brazilian attorneys to try to facilitate visitations to have a continuing relationship with Sean and his grandparents. And we had a couple of conditions that they need to stop the litigation, because as I'm sitting here speaking with you, they're still appealing the decisions that returned Sean home from Brazil, and essentially they sued me for custody in
really?
America. Yes.
What, in your heart of hearts, David, what really is their agenda?
Victory.
It's not... I mean, they may love him or not love him. People have very malignant love, too.
Yes,
so love is never the dispositive word.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And it's victory. These are powerful people. How could some gringo American, you know, beat us? And you know, they showed it wasn't about him when they did drag him through the streets. And it's very, very sad. And, you know, if they would, when the phone calls, I would have Sean call them. They would just say, "We're fighting in the courts. You know, be strong, my soldier." And you know, that wasn't very fun for him to hear. So eventually, I said, "Okay, we're gonna call and expect them to say all these things, and then just say, well, you know what? I got an A on my math quiz, or I hit a home run in baseball, and you can try to direct your grandma or your grandfather to the things that, you know, you should be talking about and they should be talking about with you. Little kids don't need these big problems, and it's a shame how adults really hurt their children and people that do alienate their children. I'm sure you've heard this and you probably have used it. You have to love your children more than you hate your ex.
Right.
And people just don't get it. And the impact and that lasts with these children is a lifetime. It's a lifetime.
My corollary to that is, would you rather be right or would you rather your child be happy? Because people have a whole bunch of reasons they think that they're right for doing what they did, and they can make you the list. And I, you know, I'm not talking about in your kind of case, but that's, I ask them that. Maybe you're right. Maybe they are a jerk. So what's more important to you?
Right.
Wait, I know.
Okay, I'm going to try to pick up a call again. We have Lynn calling from Ohio. Are you there?
Hi, Jill.
Hi, Lynn. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. You have a question for David?
Hi, David. I've followed your story from the beginning, and my heart goes out to you all that you've been through, and I'm just so happy to see that he's home with you. So I just wanted to preface my question with that. I'm going through a somewhat similar situation, except it's on a domestic front. It might as well be a foreign country. It's been about 1,000 miles away, different state, with my boys who are 3 and 4. And I've seen them about 45 hours in the last, since May of 2010, under the supervision of my husband, and in his home. And it's in a gated community and an affluent neighborhood. And I feel like right now I can't even get a court of law to hear our case on the custody issue. And I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on domestically? I know you were able to get the help of Hillary Clinton and a lot of diplomats from our country because of, you know, it being a foreign country. Do you have any advice for how we could get our court systems here or our legislator here to help assist us, you know, to help change things here so that this doesn't happen? I mean, it's been another 6 months since I've seen the children. They're 3 and 4. And I'm just at his mercy. And I too, have gone to that state, traveled at my own expense, and have been disappointed, waited, and, you know, because he decided me not to see them. Again, I don't have a custody order, and we're waiting for that. So do you have any advice for me as to how on a domestic front? I mean, this happens here so often.
Sure. Well, it is very unfortunate that courts are very slow. And What I would suggest in the meantime, obviously you need to have a lot of patience, and it's sad that it does happen in our own country. You need to try to stay in contact with your children as much as possible, whether it's daily phone calls, Skype, if your husband will allow that. You should at least be able to get a court order to allow contact via email, via Skype, via telephone, while they're waiting to get to your case. And I guess they're not allowed to come visit you, and I don't know all the ins and outs of
yeah, past. I'm in a hot when he's in Florida, and because he has possession of them, he just does not allow them to leave, and for me to try to get them, like I said, he's in a gated, guarded community, it would be trespassing, and until the court deals, they've decided to deal, what happened is he's a bigamist, he married another woman, kind of set up a double life, and then came and took the children and already had this life established, from our home in Ohio, and because I didn't have a custody order, there was nothing to enforce. We're both the parents, and he has just as much right under the law as I do.
But not to remove the child. I mean, one of the things we teach people is stranger danger, but most abductions are done by, if not a parent, a family member, someone who's known to the child. And because you are both parents, and if you are both fit parents and recognized as fit parents, you do have just as much right. And I don't think that a parent is allowed to remove the children from the jurisdiction if the other parent isn't amenable or acquiescence to that. Judge?
There was nothing pending. There was nothing filed at that time in court. So
you are, if you make the move before anybody files anything, mm-hmm. you can do it. That's
right.
The problem. Once there's a filing, you have to have leave of court or an agreed order. But when people know that they're going to do that, that's their window of opportunity. And, of course, like in my court, I get those kind of cases way too much. And I say you bring them back. I order custody mm-hmm. back to the jurisdiction. Let's say it's Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Back to Illinois. The mom, in the last case, the mom can come or not come, but the child is coming back. If she violates that order, we get a sheriff which is the worst thing you ever can do. But that is all you can do.
Right, right. Well, you know what? Again, that's very similar. In that first order, see, I actually drove them to the airport, and not knowing that I was never going to see them again. And that first order that we got from the courts here, where it was our home state, it was Sean's habitual residence, was a return order. And I imagine what you're saying is that she could have gone, or Lynn can go to the court, or have gone to the court, and got a return order for the children to come back to their home state where they are settled, where they are going to school. And with that order, then you would hope it would be respected in Florida. Is that am I following you there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had gone to court and filed for an ex parte motion to return the children, and we were told by the court that unless there was an allegation of physical child abuse, that they would wait until we got into court, filed a motion.
And that's very troubling. That's where education, I think, in a lot of these judicial branches, we really need to educate them. Even with Hague cases, they look at these cases as simple family matters, custody cases. They don't see that it's a child abduction or it's a removal. And they don't abide by the law. And I think education and public awareness and speaking about these issues and to your point, getting legislation, getting legislators aware that you can't just remove. It's wrong. It's the best interest of the child. And
right.
Unless that child is in a bad situation, to remove a child from a stable environment where they're going to school, where they have friends and family, and take them any place without one of the parents' consent is not healthy. And I don't understand why a judge wouldn't give you that order. But I'm not a lawyer, so some of these things, I guess, are, I face so many things I couldn't ever understand on how these rulings were handed down, and I just had to appeal and keep going. But I do know that first order of the return and eventual custody was really strong. She went down and filed things in Brazil in our case without us even knowing it, trying to get us into a family court. I don't know if your ex did that in Florida and tried to establish that as the jurisdiction, but I would imagine Ohio is the jurisdiction that still should adjudicate any custodial issues.
Well, right now where it stands, he did exactly that same thing. He did go to Florida and file for a declaration of paternity, and we filed here. We had a court kind of jurisdictional battle. I ended up winning the appeal in Ohio, and so now we're stuck at a divorce hearing up in Ohio in March, the end of March, and then in Florida, a validation of marriage in February, and nobody has addressed the children, neither state. And I'm just wondering, like, what can I do? Like, how can I bring the attention? I have great attorneys, but it's just because they're with father, and I don't know. I just feel at a loss, and like I said, I'm severely alienated. I found out that they were enrolled in a daycare. I contacted them. I've got copies of their enrollment form. I'm nowhere listed on there as the mother.
Lynn, let's let David tell us about his march toward that end and creating the media awareness and getting Congressman Chris Smith involved. I'm gonna let you go, and I appreciate your call so much.
Thank you.
And good luck, Lynn. And whatever you can do to stay in contact with your children, even if it's a phone call where you get to say I love you. If you're allowed to Skype or have any contact, write letters, send emails, try to call, try to say to them you love them, no matter what, no matter even if he tries to turn them against you, not just on a piece of paper where the school doesn't know about you, but try to do whatever you can. And hopefully the rule of law will be followed. They will be brought back to Ohio where a judge who will hopefully be a good judge will get it, and you will get some sort of at least shared custody if you're not the primary custodian. I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lynn. Bye-bye.
Lynn. So let's talk about your book a little bit and what you're doing now. And your book is called A Father's Love, One Man's Unrelenting Battle, to say the least. That's not to say the least is not part of the title, but... but... here you are, you've written a book, and how are you going to insulate Sean from that?
Because he knows.
Obviously that's a concern, I'm sure.
Yes, well, he knows that I wrote a book. In fact, he picked out the picture, the front cover.
Really? It's
lovely. It was on our dock in our backyard. I built that when we first moved into our home. So he knows about the book, and he knows that what happened to him wasn't right, and he suffered a lot, and he knows that what I'm trying to do is to prevent this from happening to other children and their moms and dads. So he's not isolated to the fact on what I'm trying to do, but he's just a normal boy doing normal things. And, you know, I have a meeting or I have to go do an interview. In fact, when he first came back and Grandma was going to pick him up from school, he said, are you going to go on another TV show and tell people how much that you love me and tried to get me home? So it was very sweet.
So this might be the reverse of what we think. This might actually be a healing process for him.
Yeah, it is. In fact, one birthday, it wasn't this birthday, it was the last birthday. I told him if he got all A's and two B's, he would get that cell phone. Every kid wants a cell phone. And he didn't. He got a C, so I lucked out there. And then he looks at me and he goes, you know what? I don't want a cell phone anyway. You know what I want for my birthday? I want all the other kids to come back home. And he looked at me, and of course I got a little choked up, and I'm thinking, is he just feeling sorry for himself when he said that because he knows it's going to touch me? And he looks at me, and he goes, I'm serious. They need to come back. I'm serious, you know. He's very bright and very intuitive. And, you know, someday his book, if he writes one, if he chooses to, it will tell a lot. You know, the eyes, how it looks through the eyes of a child, and then growing up, he experienced a great deal of pain and loss and love. We have a foundation. It's called bringshawnhome.org. We're a 501c3. We are in the process of getting a grant program together to help folks who have a plane that they need to catch to go into a different country to attend a court hearing to get their kids back. We're trying to still, you know, create more awareness. We're planning a fundraiser in the spring. And our website, we have forums with many left-behind parents that we're working with. We were able to use some of the media contacts that I was able to make by talking to the folks with my case and get some parents' cases highlighted. We had a dad who served in Iraq. His name is Michael Elias. He was a wounded veteran. He came home from war only to find that his wife was having an affair. So they got divorced, and she was not going to be their primary custodian. She worked for the Japanese embassy in New York, used her connections, and got fake passports from her friends in the Japanese consulate in Chicago and abducted their two sons, and he hasn't seen them in over 3 years. And here's a guy who fought for our freedom, put his life on the line, so you and I could be speaking right now, free, safe. Government isn't helping him get his children back from Japan, which is an ally, a friendly neighbor. So, you know, anything that we can do to expose the gross miscarriage of justice and to create awareness and educate even local law enforcement. Somebody will go in and say, look, I'm afraid that my wife or my husband or my ex is going to remove our children and go, sorry, wait till the court, tell it to the judge. This is a family matter. You know, we have more important things to do. So it's just to keep beating the drum, to be the voice. My voice fell on deaf ears for so many years, and there's so many parents. And not only one of the things my dad said when Sean came home, he said, not only did I get my grandson back, but I got my son back. Mm. This is devastating to not only the left-behind parent, but all of the whole family.
Of course. And, is this foundation just for international abduction, or does this foundation have any, would it help somebody like Lynn?
Right now we're focusing on international abduction. But parental alienation, that's we have topics on our forums about that, and education in police forces and the judicial, some judges even with as far as international, they'll look at well, the parent wants to go to Brazil, let's look, okay, Brazil's a Hague country, so if the parent keeps the child longer than they're supposed to for their travel, Brazil will send them back. So we have to show these judges, no, Brazil doesn't send the children back. So right now we are focused mainly on international cases, but I can completely empathize and understand what Lynn is going through. And, we need more help and progress in our own country with these sorts of things.
We do, because to so many alienated parents, David, and I remember when your case broke and it was, you know, widely publicized, and so many parents would say to me, why should we be so concerned with a child that's been abducted to Brazil or Japan or anywhere, any other international destination, when my child is across town and their mind has been literally kidnapped and I can't get to them because the courts are not cooperating with me?
You know, you're 100% right, and I don't think you know, it's recognized really legally or punishable, or how do you really quantify and prove that one parent is alienating the children? That's where I think we need to focus some attention on, to, as they did in Brazil, and I give them credit, to really make it a crime. Independent psychologist, and really make it a crime. It's child abuse.
And I think that
it is a crime in Brazil.
It's so very important that they did pass that law in Brazil. And how do you think? Because you really spurred that on. I mean, that was that's your baby. You did that, and you should be so proud of that. But how do you think it's affecting children who are still there? And how do you think, what's the outcome going to be for those children who are still there and abducted by the alienator?
I would only hope Brazil will get better and start returning children. This is where Congressman Smith, who was such a strong advocate and such a true champion for my case, but not only for my case, for the cause as a whole and continuing. He's introduced legislation. It's called H.R. 1940.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially it's, say, a 10 to 17-point plan on what we need to do to get these children back. You start with a polite letter, a diplomatic note, a phone call, some public exposure, all the way down to Brazil, Japan, Mexico. You don't return our children, we're not going to give you $2.5 billion this year in tax preferences. We're not, that's one of the things with these international borders. We have Mexico, 400 kids last year. The amount of children that are abducted, there are thousands and thousands. I was always told initially 2,800, for several years, 2,800. But yet, you see the reports, more kids are getting abducted to foreign countries and not returning. There's got to be somewhere close to 8,000, 9,000, 10,000. And if these children were on a ship, a cruise ship, going across the Ivory Coast, and these or Somali pirates came and hijacked them, but they were all on one ship, we would have all of our forces deployed to rescue these kids, because there's 400 in one country, 260 in another. It's not the highest priority. Our ambassador to Mexico, they're worried about arms, they're worried about immigration, border control, drugs, and these several hundred children aren't on the top of their list. And
mm-hmm.
And if we use this legislation, if it gets passed, and they see that the checks are getting off and we're going to withhold money from them, they're going to send those kids back. And we use it once or twice, this legislation, which will, the top point is sanctions against the worst offenders, the worst flagrant violators on international child abduction, these countries that are essentially safe havens. The other countries, more likely than not, will start to return our children because they know what's coming down the pipeline. And it all happens with education. I'll talk to anybody, any group, to just keep getting that message out. And fortunately, Congressman Smith stepped in, and he showed what a true champion he was, not only for me, but for the cause that he believes in. He's a great guy. I could never say enough about him.
You are sadly a great example of all important change and transformation in the world. Always takes place with first someone getting screwed.
Yeah, well, you know what? You could say I got screwed, but I really feel like I'm the lucky one.
No, but I mean initially.
Yeah, no,
that's
you're right.
That's where it all, and so many people are going to benefit.
Well, we hope.
As a result of what you went through.
I really
All right,
hope.
We've got a couple more calls I want to take. I'm going to try to pick up area code 541. Are you there? Okay, that's your last shot. I am going down here to area code 780. What's your name, caller?
Yes, it's Chris Jones in Edmonton,
well,
Alberta.
Hi, Chris Jones. How are you? This is Chris Jones from Alberta, Canada, who is a board member of the Parental Alienation Awareness Organization and head of the Alberta chapter for PAAO. Welcome.
I just want to say thank you, David, for being on this show. This is, the real importance of you being here is that people feel there's someone who actually succeeded. And in so many of these cases, people have given up hope, as you said. But so I really congratulate you, and I'm glad of all. I've just been just lapping up what you're saying. I have a question for you. As I understand it, Brazil passed an anti-parental alienation law last year.
Yes.
Was that because of you, do you think, or?
Yes. Yes, that was because of the attention that our case it became so public, and when the three Brazilian court-appointed psychologists independently wrote an in-depth report pointing that my son was being severely alienated, it really brought it to the public attention. And yes, because of that, it was the catalyst of the passing of the law in Brazil. Hopefully we can look at that in our country and get some sort of mirror law.
And that was the other point of my question. Do you feel it is model legislation, or has it helped other people who may be, I mean, I imagine, I read actually that there are many other children have been abducted, parentally abducted in Brazil from America.
Yes, yes, there are. And, you know, as you said, to not give up hope. And sometimes the hope can be in the most minuscule form, but you have to hold on to it, because if you lose it, then you lost everything. So these folks, these parents in Brazil, and there's still somewhere about 60 children, a lot of them have come to the term where they're not going to get their children home, and they have to just try to at least be in their lives and have some sort of access. So Brazil still isn't really doing what they need to, and that's return children. Yet they still demand America to return children to Brazil when they're taking the other way. And in fact, there were 7 children returned to Brazil while my son was being held there illegally. But the progress is so awfully slow. And the worst thing about it is every day that you miss of a child is a day you can never get back with that child. And we don't have all the time. Our children are growing up without us in their lives. And sometimes, you know, because of the separation, they don't even need to keep practicing alienation. They really started to ratchet up the pressure on my son when I was able to visit him. And then they would take him back up in their apartment and say, you can't hug him, you can't call him dad, you can't say I love you, you can't show affection to him, he abandoned you, he didn't want you. And he goes back to that house of horrors. What can he do? It made these visits so torturous for him that it came to a point when I wasn't going to do that. I wasn't going to allow them to have me be a part of their torture, because when we would go to see each other, he would break out in a sweat. They would poke him in the ribs and put a tape recorder in front of him to try to get him to say things like, I don't want you, I want to stay here. It was awful. And because of the media, which I also learned is essentially our fourth branch of government, with the power that they have, yes, we do have that law in Brazil. And hopefully we can get something like that. It could be at least more recognized in the courts, and then there could be some punishment to that parent who's practicing this on the children, because it's torture, it's abuse, it's mental and emotional, psychological abuse on these innocent children.
Okay, that's my question. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris, for calling.
Good work. Thanks, Chris. Thank you.
So does it make it a crime in Brazil, and are other countries doing that as well? Parental alienation, is it a crime? Well, what's the penalty?
It can be jail time in Brazil. It can be punishable with prison, which is good. Hopefully they're using that law, not that it's out there and it's not being used. Hopefully they'll do it. Just like, you know, as I was saying before, we sanction some of these worst offenders, and they'll return our children. Well, if a parent in Brazil gets implicated as an alienator, and you know, a couple of them go to jail, hopefully people will realize, hey, we can't do that. But that's what we need. We need to set some examples with punishment. And hopefully, again, the more we talk, just this radio show right now that we're on, people listening, the more people that can hear, the more people can do something once they know about it. And talk to your local legislators. Start at the state level and say, you know what, we need this bill, because there's 50% of marriages end in divorce, and I'm sure most of those marriages don't end as best friends either, and the children are the ones who suffer. So there's a lot of work to be done, and it is unfortunate, because the life of our children, they grow up so quick, and
so
any
quick.
Any day lost is a tragic day.
Well, we just have a short time left, David, and I just want you to go over your information again for the website and tell us about your book one more time, A Father's Love, and where people can buy it.
They can find it on Amazon, on BarnesandNobles.com, and bookstores. I know some Walmarts were carrying it, and our foundation is BringSeanHome.org, and we have a lot of information, how to help, forums from international abductions. We do talk about parental alienation. It's a very informative website, and I encourage anyone to go and log on and check it out, and if they have information, you know, we share, we talk. And if they would like to get some inspiration by reading Father's Love, that would be great as well. Proceeds from the sales of that book go to the foundation to help these families and struggling over the tragic issue being torn apart by child abduction. And we'll just keep beating our drum and trying to create awareness and educate and doing what we can to help our kids. Really.
We will, because we're all working towards the same end goal, and that is to save our most precious commodity, our children, and not have any other children go through what your child and my children have gone through. It's not fair, it's not right, and there's no common sense in it at all, and we have to make a change in divorce culture. And if you keep speaking out, David in New Jersey, and Michelle and I are here, and there's Chris up in Alberta, we've got to cover and saturate this world with what is right so that our children can come out on top and be successful adults. And I just appreciate you so much and what you do, and our thoughts and our prayers are with you and your son for a continued healthy relationship. And Michelle, again, a wonderful show. Thank you.
Thank you. David, thank you so much. And for anyone listening, it's more than just an inspirational book. It's a how-to. How to be the ultimate father, because you did it. You did it. And even people who don't go through what you're going through, it's still a good book for them to read about what it means to be a father.
Well, thank you. Thank you both so much. It was really a pleasure speaking with you. And, yes, we are all for the same cause, the betterment of society, the well-being of our children. And we might have to start low and work our way up, but we're not going away. You know, one more child that we can prevent from being abducted or prevent from being alienated is one more that won't suffer.
You're right. You're right. Well, Godspeed.
Best to you.
And we will be in touch soon, I hope. Let's continue to work together and make a difference. Thank you all for listening tonight.
Thank you, everybody.
And
have a good
tune week. Tune in again next time. We'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks
Bye-bye.
So much.